Welcome back with Jared Bell from News Today. Today we want to thank Chris Mortensen. Here's a little bit more of a clip from Solomon Wilcots about, well, you do have to listen to your players.
I think also we have to listen to him because he deserves the right to say who he responds to best. Even though we may not like his reasons for why he responds to someone more so than the other, he does get to make that call.
What do you think about that, Jarrett?
That's interesting, and I'm sure there's definitely some merit to that. I think the thing is that you want diversity. I mean, you know, your coaching staffs, the people that are working in your organizations, because different people do indeed respond to different people in different ways. And I think that's the thing that's kind of been at the root of the situation with coaches in the NFL for a number of years, is that that diversity just wasn't there. And sometimes that diversity doesn't, you know, reflect itself in the head coach. It may be an assistant coach or position coach or coordinator or some person like that, someone in the front office. But I think that the more differing viewpoints you have and different people that you have that bring different perspectives, you know, culturally to any situation is helpful.
Do you think ultimately Larry's comments are going to hurt or help him in terms of his relationships on the Chiefs?
Oh, I don't know if people pay a whole lot of attention to that. I think it just depends on if he keeps running for like 150 yards a game, I think they'll love him. And if he all of a sudden goes into the tank, people will have more reasons to criticize. I think that's usually what it comes down to. You know, the interesting thing about sports, and when you talk about race and society and things like that, a lot of times the performance supersedes a lot of the differences, and it can actually bring people closer together and give people opportunities to learn more about each other and things of that nature. So I think for Larry Johnson, as long as he exhibits himself as a good teammate, as long as he's not the type that's, you know, bashing on his own guys, you know, in that regard, as we've seen, and being selfish and things like that, I think that would hurt him more than him expressing his opinions.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's sort of the Muhammad Ali syndrome, that when you have a stage where you are the best or one of the very best, that you have that space created to say some things and get away with some things, even that you might. But to me,
you know what, Nick, to cut you off for a second though, the one thing that Larry Johnson has that a lot of people don't have in his situation is that he's the son of a coach, so he probably does have an opinion that is a little bit deeper than the average guy, because he probably looks at coaches and values the impact of coaches differently than a lot of players, just because he grew up in that environment.
I agree with that. I just find it interesting when a player takes that. It takes some courage to open that up. And I want your perspective as an African-American journalist at the highest level. When a Solomon Wilcots and a Tim Brown and a Michael Irvin and a Stuart Scott and a lot of the outstanding black journalists are able to tell stories that weren't really available to them 15, 20 years ago, that also creates more of this diversity. And so in a way, maybe that influences the dialogue. And maybe in turn, even though the NFL's not doing as much as it could, when you compare it to college football, where it's like 2%, it's doing a great job.
Oh, no question about that. And I think, you know, even in our business, in the media business, I mean, there's cries for more diversity. I mean, it's in a lot of areas of society that you can look at situations and wonder if the playing field could be more level. In a football context, yeah, you're right. The colleges, you'd expect colleges to kind of lead the way on this, seeing that most of them are public institutions and that sort of thing, but that really hasn't been the case. So the NFL has been a good example, and even, you know, when you think about other pro sports like the NBA, where they've been a lot more willing to hire black coaches historically for, you know, way longer than the NFL, I think that's one of the positives that you could hope that could, you know, continue to manifest.
One of the fun things we like to do on the show, Jared Bell, from USA Today, is to crossbreed people from different sports. And yesterday we put Peter Costas on the spot, who's a golf expert for CBS, talking about the Rex Grossman thing. But you know what he said? He said something very interesting. He said, Under pressure, some players know how to slow down the game. And clearly, if you look at college and the pros, Rex Grossman has not proven that in those situations things slow down the way, in any way, they did for Dan Marino. And we're joined by Jim Beatty to talk about this crossbreeding theme, which is, in this case, racial issues in sport. Just briefly, Jim, we're talking about Larry Johnson and his comments about Dick Vermeil, essentially that even though Dick is a player's coach, or was a player's coach, that there was a gap in his understanding that inhibited his ability to take criticism from Dick that is not there with Herman Edwards. What would be your comment as you look at relations in baseball, where there's only about 8, 9, 10% of the players African-American, in terms of what a difference it would make if there were more African-American coaches?
Hey, Nick. Yeah, that is an interesting question, and one as a baseball executive that we always keep a look at, because essentially your players are your clients. And when you're out there and you're trying to get your clients, not necessarily to buy your product, but to perform at their highest level, you need to be able to connect with them. And in baseball, and I'm sure, you know, most sports, maybe not so much basketball because they don't have a lot of coaches, but football certainly is applies to that. We try to build our coaching staff, if not just our manager, but at least our coaching staff, to be able to bridge some of those cultural, racial, however you want to put it, and primarily with us in baseball, there are a lot of Latin players. We need to have coaches that not only speak Latin, but understand where the Latin players are coming from. And the difficulty there is a Venezuelan kid is not like a Dominican kid, is not like a Puerto Rican kid, is not like a Mexican kid. They're different cultures. And sometimes we as, you know, Americans sometimes lump them all together, and you really can't do that.
Jarrett Bell, before we let you go, I want to thank you so much. Any final comments in terms of the improvement and the demonstration of the quality of African-American coaches like a Tony Dungy, like a Marvin Lewis, like a Lovie Smith? Do you think that you're going to see an acceleration now in the availability of head coaching jobs?
Well, I don't know. In a dramatic acceleration, I don't know. I think the thing that, you know, the Fritz Pollard Alliance has been really active in trying to create opportunities for a lot of coaches. And I think with the success that Marvin Lewis and Tony Dungy and Lovie Smith and coaches like that have had, it kind of, you know, it's a copycat league. And so it opens the door to get people in the discussion, to get people into the interviews, to get those opportunities. I don't think that that's going to go backward at this point.
Well, thanks for joining us. We love your work, and we'll be looking for that article tomorrow about roughing the passer, that poor, as Sam Huff said on Monday's show, that poor little guy with a skirt on named a quarterback.
Okay, Nick. Hey, I appreciate you having me. You have a good weekend.
Thank you, sir.
Yep.
Jarrett Bell from USA Today. Now, Jim Beatty, money is raining everywhere. J.D. Drew goes to Boston. Maddux goes to San Diego. Schmidt goes to L.A. And it looks like the Giants are in trouble. What's going on?
Well, you know, Nick, really the first indication that there was money in baseball and people weren't necessarily fighting over it is that how smoothly and how quietly there was a new agreement between the players' union and the owners. And now we're seeing why. There's a different collective bargaining agreement in place that kind of changes how much a have team like the Yankees and that have $100 million plus payrolls have to spend. They used to have a large tax on their payroll if it went over such and such a point. In the past, it was around 127, got up to 137. Now it's even higher, and it's gone down from a tax down into about 30% tax by and large. So the money is out there. I think the teams are saying, and then there's always a different scenario. There are some teams that need to turn it around. The Cubs need to turn it around. They've spent money on payroll and have not had any success in the last couple of years. There are other teams that are saying, that, like the Seattle Mariners, who have had money for the last 5 or 8 years and are saying, we need to spend more. We need to turn this thing around. People are, I was just listening to the radio here in Baltimore this morning. Jay Gibbons, player with the Orioles, last year signed a contract, maybe thinking why he signed, because now he's thinking, he said, the money out there that we're seeing right now seems to be extreme. He said, we love it. We're players. We love that money going into our pockets. But even for a player to understand the levels of the pay that's going out, those contracts that are going out, I think there are players that are signed maybe in the last year or two have kind of banging their heads against the wall and saying, why didn't I think of that?
And what makes J.D. Drew in Boston so valuable? That, I mean, that's $70 million. Is he really worth it?
Well, the big thing with J.D. Drew is if he's going to be on the field every day. In the past, in this past year, he really walked away from a contract, I think, with the Dodgers that was guaranteeing him $12 million for the next year or two. I don't remember the length of it, but he obviously, his agent, Scott Boras, felt like this was a market that was going to reward him with a little bit more. I don't know why J.D. Drew would have walked away from the Dodgers. They had a successful season this year that they could build on, but he decided maybe he didn't like playing in L.A. It certainly is going to be a different tempo playing in Boston for him, so he's going to have to make some big changes. You know, he originally did not sign with the Philadelphia Phillies, and there were some problems with him there, and those are tough fans. Now, going to Boston, those are tough fans, and if he stays on the field, he will be a good player. I mean, he is a guy that can help you win. He's not a key player for you, necessarily. He's not necessarily going to be a big bat in the lineup, but he's going to be a very solid player. The only question with him in his career has been, how healthy can he stay?
What do you think is the more of the master stroke? The Dodgers signing Schmidt, getting him away from their competitor in the Giants, or Maddux going to San Diego?
Oh, I think Schmidt. I mean, obviously Maddux has been a great pitcher, but he's getting a little long in the tooth. He just signed a one-year contract with the Padres. He lives, closer to San Diego. Maybe that's what his thinking was, but he lives in the Southern California. He also lives in Las Vegas in the offseason. So I guess with that money, you probably have a couple houses these days. But I think Schmidt is going to be a help for the Dodgers. As you know, Maddux was only there for part of this past year. Schmidt, again, if he stays healthy, he's had some health problems over the last couple of years, but if he stays healthy, he's a bigger performer every day out there every 5 days out there than Maddux would be. And Maddux would be a good match with San Diego. I mean, the Dodgers, L.A. Stadium is a nice pitcher's ballpark, and Maddux leaving Wrigley certainly felt a lot more comfortable in L.A. than he did in Wrigley, and San Diego is going to be similar to that.
Finally, this Mike Piazza going to Oakland for $8.5 million to be a DH, to end pretty much his career as a catcher. What do you think the trade-off is there in terms of Piazza versus Frank Thomas and what he brought to the A's last year?
Well, Piazza in a crunch can be a backup, but primarily they got him as a bat. The big thing there is Piazza's been a National League player. Does not know any of the pitching in the American League, although there's been obviously some guys that have gone to the American League, but Frank Thomas knew the American League. So going over to Oakland, he didn't have a big learning curve. There's going to be a fairly steep learning curve for Piazza. It's going to take him a little while. He's got to learn what it's like to be a DH. Never done that. Mentally, how do you prepare? Frank had all that stuff going for him. Going into that, Frank had a little more motivation, too, coming off some bad years. Piazza, I think, is just, you know, he's got a year, he's got maybe two, he's got maybe three, but his career is starting to go downhill, and Frank was trying for a bounce back, and bounce back he did.
We're going to go to a break. When we come back, we'll ask Jim Beattie, our head games baseball correspondent, about what the next big free agent signing will be. You're listening to Head Games on Sports Byline and Sirius Satellite.